to Resettled Radio, brought to you by the ARCC, live on Planet FM.
Stay tuned for current affairs, conversation, interviews, music and more,
as we explore the perspectives and stories from resettled communities.
And bring you information from within the resettlement sector.
Welcome to Resettled Radio, brought to you by ARCC Live. It is Saturday, August 18, 2018, and I'm your host for the day, Galwak Chul. I will be bringing you the stories of the resettlement. Stay tuned, and you are listening to Resettled Radio, and the artist is Enzo Kezo from Uganda.
Maria Rosa,
That's a dance music mix from a group called itself Sour Sour, which means it's all good. You are listening to Resetta Radio, brought to you live by ARCC on Planet FM. I'm your host, Galor Chol, and I will be bringing you some stories, some resettlement stories from this studio. My colleagues Yobi and Izzedine are not in the studio today, but they will be back next Saturday. And before I take you through the stories, I want to give you community notices. And ARCC has started the third intake for Open Road for the driving program. And we are looking for volunteers who can help how to train the community background, the community, refugee background communities, how to get their restricted driving licenses. You know, it's a good to put a smile on the face of somebody. That's a great help, and that's the difference one could make in the community. We have a committed volunteers who are making difference, but that's not enough. We need your help as well, and if you have a friend who has a little time to give, you know it is something that can help a family. So that's what we are looking for. If you have some time to give, it's well appreciated, very much appreciated, and you can get hold of us through ARCC at 09-846-001, or you can give us, you know, drop us a few lines through our email at admin@arcc.org.nz. Again, admin@arcc.org.nz. Or you can go to our website, and our all contacts are there. And from now, I will give you, I will play you some of the resettlement stories, and bear with me. Some of them are very emotional, based on the journey of that person. They don't come from one place, so these are the different journeys, and this is what makes us, you know, a very vibrant community, because we are diverse and we come from all walks of life. So now I will play to you some of these stories. Stay tuned.
Democratic Republic of Congo is a French-speaking nation, so I did all of my education in French. Not many Congolese people speak English. My family is a big African family. I have my mum and dad, four brothers, and two sisters. I am the youngest. My family lived in a village called Goma, the eastern region of Democratic Republic of Congo, where I was born and raised and where I spent most of my life. My life in Goma had been good until foreign forces came and took control over my country. The foreign forces used their organized militias to lynch innocent people. After the president and military dictator of Democratic Republic of Congo, at the time my country was called Zaire, Mobutu Sese Seko, was overthrown in 1996, the instability in Democratic Republic of Congo became worse because of mass murders. Even ordinary families were targeted, but no one was ever held accountable for the crimes committed. At that time, my older brother worked at a human rights agency in Kinshasa, the capital city of Democratic Republic of Congo. His job mostly involved recording and reporting atrocities committed by various armed groups. Because of my older brother's work as a human rights activist, unknown people sent us hate messages numerous times and threatened our lives. Later, they launched a massive hunt to kill my older brother, so he had to go into hiding, and I accompanied him. They were so determined to kill my older brother and the rest of our family. One day, our family heard that some armed men came to our village and killed three of our family's friends for failing to locate us. The armed men took the bodies into the bush, chopped them into parts, and displayed the cut-off parts in our village. The killers did so as a way of sending a message to us that no one in our family would be spared. The unfortunate killing of our family's friends was shocking. We felt frightened. The scariest part was that we didn't even know who these armed men were. They could be anyone. They could even have been state-sponsored organized groups. We had no idea. Knowing that our family was in imminent danger, my older brother talked to the Red Cross, requesting that our family should be smuggled out through the border to Uganda. The Red Cross knew about the threat to our family, so we were all crammed into a car marked as the Red Cross and secretly driven to the Uganda border. Fortunately, we managed to escape safely. From the Ugandan border, we started to look for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Uganda. In a United Nations High Commissioner office, we were able to register ourselves as refugees under protection. The officer asked us to stay in a refugee camp in Uganda. However, my older brother resisted the idea of our family staying at a refugee camp. He demanded that we should live in Kampala, the capital city of Uganda. This was because the refugee camp was so poorly protected and we could easily be killed. I also felt that those who wanted to exterminate us in Democratic Republic of Congo might still be pursuing us on Ugandan soil. In the end, our family was able to move to Kampala and stay there. Sadly, my older brother's wife died soon after in Kampala due to what the post-mortem report described as poisoning. I also got scared. I felt that from that moment on, any one of us could die at any time. Not long after the tragic death of my brother's wife, one of his twin sons also passed away by poisoning. It was a double tragedy for our family. Later, we found out that those killers had indeed pursued us all the way from Democratic Republic of Congo to Uganda. This made me think that the enemy might have already been at the refugee camp, mingling with us unknowingly, and that they could see us, but we could not see them. Our family felt so anxious that we had to request the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees to arrange settlement to another country under a protection case. The United States, Canada, and Australia were on our top three choices. United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees was fully convinced that our lives were indeed in danger. In the beginning of 2002, we lodged our application for resettlement, and we waited until any country accepted our application. While waiting in the refugee camp in Kampala, my cousin and I opened a tailoring shop. The little income that we received from the tailoring business supplemented the meager assistance that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees had provided us. Canada was the first country that responded to our application. Unfortunately, it declined our request for resettlement, but they did not provide any reason. We later learned from our friends that Canada accepted only refugees with small-sized families and people who speak proper English for resettlement. Our family consisted of 15 members. It's a small village. Also, no one in our family spoke good English. We had lived in Kampala for 7 years as refugees. At that time, I was still single, but my older brother remarried. Despite the help from the rest of us, it was still hard for him to take care of all his young children. In the beginning of 2009, New Zealand responded to our case, and we heard that our application was finally successful. At the end of 2009, our family arrived in New Zealand. Life in New Zealand was different to Democratic Republic of Congo. First of all, I couldn't speak English at all, because I had never gone to any English school. All I knew in English was the word good. So when people asked me, "How are you?" I answered, "Good." When people asked me, "Where are you going?" I replied, "Good." When people asked me, "How long have you been here?" I said, "Good." Sometimes I even responded in French. In the first 6 weeks in New Zealand, we stayed at Mangere Refugee Resettlement Centre. And then all 15 of us were taken from Auckland to Hamilton for resettlement. Once we arrived in Hamilton, volunteers from the Refugee and Migrant Services offered us a lot of support. For the first 6 months, they helped us with opening bank accounts, shopping, paying bills, and managing our lives in this new home, city, and country. The Congolese and Sudanese communities in Auckland also gave us a lot of support for our resettlement in Hamilton. The hardest thing as a newcomer in Hamilton was to find a job. It was very difficult to get one. Most employers asked me if I had any work experience in New Zealand. I couldn't understand why I needed work experience in New Zealand for a job that anyone was capable of. Having a prerequisite for work experiences in New Zealand would have been a great challenge for any immigrants from refugee backgrounds who had just arrived. Initially, I came to New Zealand with a mindset that I would not depend on social welfare. I was determined to start working straight away. But with the New Zealand employment system, I had to. I think many immigrants would have caught up with things quickly if they were given chances to be trained for jobs. Some immigrants would come to New Zealand with big dreams, but those dreams could not progress without securing a job. I was able to get a full-time cleaning job for night shift while I was studying a two-year English course at the Waikato Institute of Technology in Hamilton. A good friend of mine at school introduced me to someone who knew a cleaning company, and I applied for a cleaning job. I learned that networking was very important to find a job in New Zealand. As an immigrant, it was even difficult to get a cleaning job. It's hard to get a job without knowing anyone. I started going to work at night while going to school during the day. After completing the English course, my English had improved a lot. I enrolled for a certificate in social practice, and I completed it in 2013. Some employers entertain racial profiling at the workplace, despite it being against the law. At my cleaning job, I was called many racial names. Although they all knew my last name, Butu, which was easy to pronounce for anyone, my colleagues would say things like, "Hey, Blackie, bring this and that." I was upset. The more disturbing thing was that even when I raised the issue of racial discrimination to my supervisor, he never acted. When I approached my manager, he didn't take any action either. In the end, I quit my job because racism affected me mentally at work. My Indian workmate in the same company went through the same racial discrimination, and he also quit his job. With this experience of racial discrimination, I didn't know who to turn to for help, especially after my manager didn't do anything to stop what was going on. I felt like I didn't belong. A word of advice to new immigrants and those who are coming to settle in New Zealand is that it is a completely different environment here. Be prepared for culture shock. You may not find a job as quickly as you wish upon your arrival, or your boss might be lenient with racial discrimination in the workplace. Weather and social life are also different. Life in New Zealand is good. People are friendly. Kids go to school for free and healthcare is awesome. But it's so stressful if you don't have family members who will be on your side for moral support. In New Zealand, you can say anything or do anything you wish as long as you don't cross the line. Freedom of speech or freedom to associate with anyone is pretty much provided to anybody in New Zealand. But some people quickly abuse these freedoms. Many young immigrants quickly forget that it was a lack of such freedoms that forced them out of their respective countries in the first place. I came to New Zealand to rebuild my life. I am currently a second-year student studying for a Bachelor of Social Work in Auckland while working part-time. My dream is to work with people and help them. New Zealand is my home, and I have to contribute to building it.
Welcome back. Welcome to Resident Radio, brought to you by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. This is one of the stories I told you to listen to. Very heartbreaking, but we will talk about it. We will come back and talk about it. Yobi is here, and I'm here too. So let's play you a little song here, and we will come back and talk about this story and some more information. Thank you. Stay tuned. The artist's name is Bobby Wine, and we picked that song for a reason, and we will talk about it later. You never been friendly, you always stood by me.
chemba kugamba lero.
We renew my promise to you, my promise.
I will never be a fool.
You will never lose me to fate or lose me to fortune.
How could I ever make you cry?
Answer is there, to kid is there,
my joke.
Oh, kid is there, now who's to be there?
Let me renew my promise to you, my promise. I will never be a fool.
You will never lose me to fate or lose me to fortune.
How could I ever make you cry?
I'm so busy to be
busy
with you. Oh, kid is there, now who's to be there?
I will not disrespect you like these other guys, because I know how lucky I am. Usaba ufune ya kasira, tukende kuku katina. Tutule wa mozo ngele, ununire mchichu, ninange kubuli.
Ibyo kukwa kala vienditu,
tufatinge vitu yechusa. Kama tumefuna, na yeze nawe iti forever never. Kade kodo so vinyinji, tena manyinyiza. Na ye mukwano, kwekwe nina.
Let me renew my promise to you, my promise.
I will never be a fool.
You will never lose me to fate or lose me to fortune.
How could I ever make you cry?
I'm so busy, so busy,
so busy. Oh, I'm so busy, so busy.
Oh, kid is there, now I'm so busy.
You told me I don't want to be there.
Welcome back. Welcome to Rosario Radio, brought to you live by RCC on Planet FM 104.6. Galu Actual and
Joby here.
Yep. And the musician is Bobby Wine from Uganda, Kampala. And we will talk about his history now while he's playing on the background.
So what happened to Bobby Wine now?
Bobby Wine now is in jail. He's behind the bars. Bobby Wine, Uganda went to election in 2017, and Bobby Wine, as a musician, he got a lot of followers. So he easily got the seat. Then he went to Ugandan Parliament. He became a member of Parliament, and he's the youngest guy
in
the Parliament. And he came with a lot of, you know, lot of changes, a lot of hope. Very good orator and a very good speaker. And he could not even fear, you know. He said there are things that need to change. You know, we are in 21st century. Things should not be done in the hallway.
Yeah, and good voice for younger people.
Yeah, and you know, you are a great grandfather, and you are still there like for life. You know, what do you think about the other generations coming? You know, give away at least. And then the president is in Ugandan constitution, there's age limit for the president, and the current president, I assume the presidency since 1985, you know, and he has been a president ever since. How many generations he has led. And he said he's still the best one, you know. How can you be the best one for the rest of your life, you know, when you are leading a nation? Yes, you are the best one, but if you are still the best one, where are the leaders that you have grown? You know, because one of the things, one of the qualities of the leadership, you know, you have to grow leaders.
Yeah, and give way to the next generation.
And give way to the next generation. You are not leading to the grave, you know. That's what is happening. And because Bobby Wine was telling him, no, there should be, this age limit thing should not be there. It should get out. We don't need it. Why do we need age limit for?
And he jailed for it.
Yeah, yeah, he said, yeah, that should be, no, he was saying that should be age limit, you know, age limit, if you become 70, done, finished, done. Enough.
Yeah, give
enough.
Way to the next
give way
generation.
To other people. And now at the age of, what, 90? I don't know. And he's still the best president, that's what he's claiming to be. And from 1985 till today. And so he arrested the guy. The guy is now in jail. And he was jailed in a military barrack, not to the police station either. And so the order to torture him came from the president himself. And so the guy is so is tortured so bad. He got a broken neck, broken ribs, and I think he lost his teeth too. And a broken nose is like even the family lost hope in his life. We don't know. And it is so crazy. And the president today is stupid enough, he tweeted saying, you know, we release him from politics and so he's free now in jail to compose his own songs. How stupid is that?
This is what the question about free speech here, right? And, you know, and to be honest, like New Zealand have the open free speech and we still misuse it while the other countries, you don't even have, you know, ability to tell your opinion or tell them this is not right, you know. See that Bobby Wine, you know, when he told the president that it is not right that you are in power just because, you know, it should be an age limit to the constitution to hold the power in the country and leave it to the younger people. When he said his opinion, he just jailed for it and he was tortured for it and he literally on his, you know, edge of the life, right?
Like he is the star in the parliament, in the Ugandan parliament. Whenever he came, is because he said, I'm coming to the parliament not to make money, but to make change. I don't need money, but, you know, I live in a poor community, and their lives must change. They need clinics. They need clean drinking water. They need the schools. They need everything to change, you know. Things should not be done the whole way. Where's the money? Where does the money go? At least give services, you know.
And this is why we need free speech, right?
Yes.
Because free speech enable you to question things, enable you to tell them that this is not working and this is working and we need a better future. We need to do that. We need to do that thing and it will work better or not, right? And that's why we need feet. Without free speech, we wouldn't, even New Zealand wouldn't even have a, you know, first woman to vote.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have same-sex marriages legislation here if we don't even have free speech.
And we would not even be talking about this diversity thing that we enjoy all the time. It's because of the free speech, you know.
Yeah, because of the ability to express our voices and express our opinions.
Yeah, true.
But the question is, what about hate speech? What is the difference between free speech and the hate speech? Because we listened to the previous stories about himself, you know, the guy who has, you know, told his story about how he was resettled to New Zealand, but he still also faced hate speech of his, you know, racial discriminations, also speeches from people who were, you know, dominating his race by assuming that he was from that race and he is not the right person, right? And this kind of hate speech also questions us the ability to tell, all right, what is the borderline here? So what is free speech and what is hate speech? And where do we have to limit our speech to an extent that we don't hate people?
Yeah, I think the difference between the two, the freedom of speech and the opposite of it, is right. Reflected within the Ugandan parliament, because you have Bobby Wine, you know, exercising the power of free speech. That's what the freedom should be should be all about.
And that's what the freedom of speech should be, right? And if you do have oppositions of, you know, creating hate speech by just saying, oh, you are Bobby Willian and you are not talking, you know, from yourself. I'm attacking your, you know, personal thoughts or personal self and telling you, you shouldn't be in parliament. That is hate speech.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the borderline in between them, right? Which is that if you do speech that hurt people, that is what hate speech is.
Yeah.
Don't target it to a personal being, right? You should question things, but don't tell, you know, I'm just going to blame someone just because of their background, because of their race. Or
because of where they come from, because of their ethnicity, and because of their, you know, how they describe themselves. It's not all about it. We can now know from Australia, there's a lot going on in Australia. We have a relative. Last 2 or 3 weeks ago, she was stabbed to death in Australia. And she was a second-year law student, and she went to a party. And she, in the first place, she did not want to go to the party, but a friend of her came. You know, she was like, hey, let's go and have fun in the party. And she was like, I got a lot to do. No, we will not stay long, just for a few minutes, and then we come back. Say, okay, and then they left. And they entered into the party, and, you know, and these gangs came, South Sudanese gangs too, looking for other gangs. And then I think they were arguing in the gate, and then she came. She was like, hey, guys, what's going on? Don't argue. You know, there's nothing to argue about. Like, she was coming in to intervene. What happened? One of the guys stabbed her 3 times, and then she died instantly. Poor girl, that has nothing to do with all this.
This is the heat of the hate crimes here, right?
Yeah,
because, you know, whatever we speak on the public space, you know, if it is a hate speech, that's also, you know, timing up someone to do something criminal.
Yeah.
And also creating violence because of that speech.
Yeah.
Right? Because I experienced, to be honest, in my university, you might have heard about Don Bash, right? Who was coming into, you know, a debate for free speech versus hate speech. And I was like, all right, so what is here at stake is, you know, telling things about, you know, Maori or indigenous communities in a very wrong way. That sparked the whole thing, right? It sparked the people who want to do crime against them. And that's also, you know, lead to something like, as you said, you know, in Australia that, you know, the Sudanese communities, you know, they are totally underrepresented there. And when they do, and these hate crimes spark things up, and, you know, these hate crimes more often going to come. Right, it's going to happen more often. And that is not right, to be honest. And I also question myself, you know, at sometimes where I'm standing, you know, what is free speech and what is hate speech? That is where that I don't understand, to be honest. Like, because, you know, as I said, even Don Bash was there and he was, you know, telling stuff, which is totally hate speech. I'm against it. But I'm also against to suppression of free speech. Don't suppress something that is free, right? And while just say that everything is hate speech. Not everything is hate speech. Hate speech is something that is hatefulness towards someone, personality, or someone background, or race, or religion. It's targeted towards that specific background. It's not targeted toward a public opinion, right? To be honest, I will really say that as a people just have that free speech, we shouldn't be abandoned free speech because of hate speech. And we shouldn't be, you know, embracing hate speech because we have free speech.
Yeah, and it's a bad combination for two of them, actually. And
to be honest, it is. It is like it is confusing as well, right? Especially for younger people.
Yeah,
it's totally confusing. I was like, "Oh, where am I gonna go?" Because someone telling me that I think that I recently talked to UN Youth, right? I was, you know, commenting on the picture of asking whether they have a diverse representation, right, in the picture, because I has been seeing, you know, that our representation over our diverse communities are not well represented.
Yeah,
especially
true.
I questioned them that 4% of New Zealanders are Somalians, right? Whether the pictures, they didn't have any Somalians in it. And I was like questioning that, why we wouldn't be have that representation? And they took it in a personal way and they said, oh, this is kind of a hate speech. And I was like, oh, right now I don't understand which is hate speech and which is free speech.
And when we come back, that's where we will get down to the bottom of it, and like, you know, is there a limit for the freedom of speech?
Yeah, and what is the border there?
And what is the borderline?
And
there?
How we can, you know, limit yourself. Even yeah. you do hate speech, you can do something. We will come back to it.
And let me play to you Gregory Isaacs, Good Night Nurse.
Your best just to make it quick. Pull my chin to the sink. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two. Tell her it's a case of emergency. There's a patient by the name of Gregory. Night nurse. Only you alone can quench the setters. My night nurse. Oh gosh. Oh, the pain is getting worse. See no doubt. I need attendance from my nurse around the clock. Cause there's no prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. My night nurse. Oh, the pain is getting worse. I'm hurt by love. Prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. Night nurse. Only you alone can quench this your thirst.
Welcome back to Resettle Radio by ARCC, and it's Planet FM 104.6.
Yep, we are live from Planet FM 104.6.
Yeah, and the music is just killing us now.
Yeah, just killing it. We have been talking about freedom, free of speech, and versus
The hate speech.
The opposite of it. And yeah, freedom of speech to me is like I'm free to say things and you are free to be silent or you are free to talk. I should not impose anything on you based on what you want to say.
Yeah.
The same thing to me either, to you, vice versa, you know.
And freedom is the expression of your voice, right? We do need free speech because, you know, if we don't have proper expression of your voice, how are you going to tell people that I am finding things harder or I am finding that's not working for me or that is not right? Because, you know, you had to tell right or wrong.
Yeah, right? It has to be. So before we get into the bottom line of what is the boundary, you know, because anything there should be a boundary there. That should be some red lines, you know. But before we get there, we listen to the history of a gentleman from Democratic Republic of Congo who ran away because of lack of freedom of speech. And he lost two family members, very close family relatives, and he ran away. He ran to Uganda, and it was very emotional when the story was read out. And the guy is here, resettled in New Zealand. He started life in Hamilton, and, you know, from there, just a new resettler and, you know, doing what he would want to do in life. And then now there are some barriers in front of him, you know. Even employers are telling him, you know, you don't have the capacity to work for us. Being asked to have some experience even for the cleaning jobs. And he was asking, what is it that a New Zealander can do in a cleaning job that I should not do? You know, those are the basic questions that anyone would ask.
Yeah, because that's the question I had it myself as well. Because, you know, when I arrived here and I questioned that, all right, so this is entry-level job, right? Because I was joined to Countdown, right? And, you know, I was working in the Countdown, just pulling out because I don't want to be in benefit. So I just popped into the work and I started working on the morning. It was like, you know, night shift, right, work. And, you know, the question they always ask is, what sort of experience you have in New Zealand? And I was like, all right, do I need an experience to, you know, just pull the stuff? And
would be like, lift that box. Oh, okay, what experience do you have?
Yeah. To lift a box, to be honest. You know, that's I don't understand how do they work with that experience quote. But for refugee communities, right, we come up with a lot of experiences then. A lot of traumas back on our shoulders. And it's not easy shift, even for, you know, himself. I was, like, so proud that he even made into doing a Bachelor of Social Work. And he had the passion to give back to the community. Which is what I really see that resilience there. You know, what, you know, refugee community.
And he loves the community. He loves the country so much. He say, this country is so great.
Yeah, and this country is his home.
Yeah, this is my home. That's what he said.
Yeah.
And this country is so great and it has a lot of hope in it.
And trust me, no one tells, you know, a place home unless they feel like it.
Yeah.
Right? We feel inclusive here. That's why we are telling, oh, New Zealand, I like it. I love New Zealand because in here I can talk about my stuff. In here I can work for it. There's a lot of positiveness here because in here people are listening to you. Right? But we still have an opposite side, which is a discrimination. We still see discrimination here. Right? But
I like his closing line when you say this country is so good. You know, you can have a lot of opportunities in it, and you can speak the way you want as long as you do not cross the line.
Do not misuse what you have.
But
that's the story with, you know, Bobby Wine, you know, because the question is, New Zealanders, to be honest, you guys have the freedom of speech here. You guys have the open door to free speech. But we're still misusing it. To be honest, that, you know, the capability of questioning your MP, questioning your government.
Yeah.
See, Bobby Wine, he just got locked up because he asked something to the president.
Yeah.
I can, you know, tweet to Jacinda by asking whether your policy is right or wrong. But I cannot ask her, oh, you are a woman, how you manage things.
Yeah.
That is hate speech.
That's a hate speech.
to be honest, that's a hate speech. Don't ask a woman, or you can't manage a job.
And right? we have a lot of social media, you know, now overflowing with hate speech. I'm telling you, from Sudanese, South Sudanese social media forums, it's crazy. They will be like, this particular community, you are nothing, you are haters, you are doing what? Even they have gone as far as producing videos, you know, hate speech. It's like crazy. What are they doing? You know, don't they have anything else to do?
Yeah, and I don't know, how do they get the time on social media just to comment or, you know, try to...
Some of them release the videos at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Or jam.
Yeah.
It's 4 a.m. in the morning. Yeah. To be honest, I won't even, like, wake up to the time.
Hey, come on, man. You should be doing something, not releasing a video at 4 a.m. in the morning. You should be doing something else if you are up in that time.
Yeah. You know, I honestly, like, see that, you know, it's not used to, you know, there is no use of raising your hate speech. It's affecting someone here, especially our younger community. Just because they are so vulnerable, to be honest, because I felt that there was people who are in, you know, New Zealand itself, that they, even at university, they don't even want to say that they have a refugee background, right, or refugee experience, right? Why? Because they fear that someone going to judge them or someone going to stigmatize or put a label on them. And by saying, or you guys are... the terrorist, or you guys are the one doing something
doing
here
something bad
right? And you guys are these racial profiles, right? Even wearing a hijab, you know, in the university, they are just, you know, not getting it. It's,
even if they don't say anything, you know, you will notice the look.
Yeah, notice the look. And it's kind of like carrying a biggest bag on my shoulder, right? That's how students are falling, because I have been talking to them and I felt, oh, this is the biggest thing on the shoulder on them, right? It's not easy for the girls wearing hijab in the university just to go around, right? And to be honest, you know...
This is so crazy. So now we get down to boundaries. What are the boundaries? So I have this experience. I was in Ethiopia in 1991, and in 1991 there was a regime change. And then the current one president was chased away, and then the other regime replaced it. And the guys who replaced it, they were rebels for like more than 30 years, you know, and they and now they are the ruling party. And they said no, you know, because the country has never seen freedom of speech. They say you are free to say anything, you are free to do anything you want. You know, this is a game changer. Everything will not be the same again. And you see what Ethiopians have been doing in that area where I live. Some of them would urinate on the street.
Oh, damn.
And when they ask, well, why are you doing this? Ah, that's freedom.
I do stake that, you know, the
so
value.
That's a boundary.
Yeah, that's the boundary there. You know, just to be honest, you know, freedom is there for the right reason. If we don't have this free speech, we wouldn't have nothing here, right? We wouldn't have reformed anything. We wouldn't be better humans if you don't have free speech.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't do that urination thing, right? To be honest, right? Don't create
the boundary in that manner. That's not good.
And understand that, you know, hate speech is attacking something, right? Mm. If it is, if you do it, if you feel like that you have committed it, just ask a simple sorry. Just say that I will try to recover myself, because I like to talk about Andrew Jett, right? Mm. You heard about the mayor from Palmerston North who have changed himself, and he said, I'm a recovering racist now. Why? Because I was a racist. And he acknowledged he was a racist, and he has reformed himself to, you know, be a good guy. And he also said, I'm developing my understanding about Maori and Pacific Islanders, you know, this indigenous community. I want to develop my understanding about them, because I had a pure understanding. That's how he had, you know, been there, and he was recovering. If you do feel like you have committed that in your lifetime, or if you are committing it, or if you will commit in the future, just ask a story and then try to understand their background, understand their experiences, you know, understand, you know, what they hold with.
The thing that I always do, you know, if I see somebody different, I don't just look at him or that or her. I just approach, you know, say hi to somebody and then have a few exchange of the words, you know, hi, where do you come from originally? And, you know, crack a joke, you know, you get connected.
Yeah, and ask for a coffee date, to be honest. Maybe if it is a girl. Right, so you can ask for a date for a coffee, you know, just ask them and just have a chat, you know.
I made a lot of friendship with a lot of people when they approach me. Hey, what's up? Where are you from? I say, just guess it. Nigeria. I say, no, I don't look like Nigerian. It would be like Ghana. No, I'm not even from that side of the continent. Okay. And then I would be like, okay, do you know how many countries in Africa? One.
Oh.
Say,
they only know Africa itself.
Yeah. See, so the mindset he had, you know, you already, you know, in filter, you know, you already filter it out.
Yeah, and you know, and it's the same story for mine as well. Mm-hmm. There's people who guess my, you know, native growing or my home country. They just say, "Oh, you are an Indian now," and I was like, "What? I'm not even Indian. Yeah. I'm totally Sri Lankan." And you know, there's total assumptions over there, right? Just ask them, you know, where you are from and what sort of background you have, you know, what sort of culture you have.
Yeah.
You know, if you to develop your understanding well, and you don't have the chance to, you know, make a hate speech.
Yeah, it's all about understanding. You know, we are all the same, no matter what color you have. No matter how you look, no matter what your background is, you know, we are all humans and we have humanity in us. That's what it is. And when you help somebody out, it's not somebody from your ethnic group. You know, you help somebody because he's a human being. That's it.
Yeah, and having different cultural understanding is something beautiful that New Zealand have, is, you know, that having diverse understandings.
Yeah.
Right? And we shouldn't be just, you know, discriminated. Just don't throw it off, you know. Just, we have a beautiful country here,
yeah,
right? And have that on, you know. Always create that whole coffee date.
We have a very small country, you know, beating all these big nations with, you know, humanity. And we have to embrace that, you know.
Yeah.
And we are so blessed to be in here.
And to the other side is, when you do see hate speech, and those people who recognize hate speech, please don't suppress free speech by hate speech, because that happened to me when I questioned United Nations, you know, UN Youth, for, you know, the UN Youth New Zealand. I questioned them for the right representation, because I questioned that 4% of New Zealanders are Somalians. Why would we wouldn't have that representation over there? And I do see that not a good representation of the whole country itself. When you send delegation or when you do declaration or events, you does need to be creating a diverse representation there, because you are creating a youth declaration and you are creating tertiary policies conferences. These are being sent to biggest influencers. When they read, they should be inclusive for everyone. It should be a representation of everyone's problems.
Yeah.
If that's not represented, my problem wouldn't be voiced over there. And I feel like I wasn't represented over there. And when I question it, they say it's a hate speech. To be honest, I'm not targeting anyone on the picture. I was not telling them they are wrong people who are represented there. I was happy that they are represented there. But I was unhappy that my brothers and my sisters from our communities are not being represented well.
Yeah. That's right. So now we will come back to it. I think we are winding down, but let's hear from Bob Marley. Get up and stand up.
And music will heal you, as always.
Yeah, you too. Always get up and stand up for your right.
Yeah.
Easy, skizzy.
Welcome back. That's the king of reggae, Bob Marley. Get up and stand up for your right.
And
welcome back.
That's a cool quote, though. You know, stand up for your right.
Yeah, you stand up for your right. You know, you have right to stand up. You have right to, to
question
sit down.
Things. And don't be a blindfolded person, to be honest. You know, being someone rational is what made us as a humans.
Yeah.
Right, because that's what you needed. You need to be rational. You need to question whether your answer is right or wrong.
And also, you know, to know the difference between the hate speech and the freedom of speech, you have to have the capability of understanding, you know. Because without understanding, you will not even know what is the difference. Maybe you are, exercising the other without knowing.
And pretty much when you tweet or when you are on social media, just ask the question to yourself, right? It's kind of having your mind voice. Ask your mind voice, am I doing something wrong or right?
Yeah.
What I am saying is the right thing or not? Whether I have that information or not? That's all. If you still finding a difficulties, just make a question. Just ask them straight ahead. You know, what's your background? What do you think about it? And then start the conversation and send them, flick them a message, you know, and talk to them freely with people. You know, to be honest, that's take over the hate speech thing. You don't need to stab someone just randomly, right? Don't do it, right? It's not worth with your life.
It's not right. It's not what you are for,
And, you know, and spend time with them. I would just say, you know, I will ask someone, say, you know, I really like what you are wearing today. And can I know how it is and what sort of the story behind it? Just ask their stories, to be honest. And that never take you a lot of time. And that also make yourself a more knowledgeable person.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you are misdescription by somebody, described in different way, don't just get mad, you know. Try to make that somebody understand where you come from, you know, in a nice way. You don't need to be like grumpy.
It
does need that.
Yeah, pretty much, love the person who hates you. Right, I would really, if someone hate me, I would really go and hug them and say, "And I love you." Right, and just because you hate me, right, and you know, hate speech never gonna be hate speech by itself. Don't raise the hate speech by hate speech.
Yeah,
right. Don't do hate by hate.
No, that's not right. Do the right thing all the time.
Love them.
You know?
Love is so furious, especially younger people. I would tell them, you know, just put the love there. You know, love them as your family, and just say, "Bro, the problem is, you don't know about my background.
Yeah.
You don't know about my experiences. Don't judge. Don't justify. Right? And don't be a person, just be a justified person. Remember, as even myself, as even anyone, you don't have every information to be like 100% knowledgeable. Einstein also not only used 20% of his brain, right? And he haven't used his entire 100% of the brain. Right, so we are only using 7% of our brains. So to be honest, we don't have much of information. So just ask and understand.
Yeah. Until we come back, I think we come to the end of our program. And you have been listening to Rasala Radio, brought to you by ARCC on Planet FM 104.6. And we will be back again next Saturday for more discussion. And thank you for being with us.
Yeah, and remember to love, right? Coffee day thing,
man. Say hi to somebody you don't know before.
Yeah, and ask them their cultural background or experience.
Yeah, and then you two will get along.